and where you were born?
Daisy Brown, born in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan.
And when did you come to BC?
In 1944, I believe it was.
Oh, right. And why did you come here?
During the war years, and my husband was not able to go into services, and so he came here and worked in the shipyards. And I didn't intend to work at that time, but I found that, you know, it was pretty long days for me. And so I took a part-time job in March of 45 with the union. So I worked 4 hours a day, which suited me quite well in those years back. And so since then, well, I've been on full-time for many years now, of course, and so... And I've been on my own for many years now, too, so it's been a necessity to have 8 hours a day.
Had you worked before you got a
Yes, I worked with the Department of Education in Regina, and following that, I worked with the Workmen's Compensation Board in Regina for 8 years before I came to Vancouver.
Right. And how was it that you became interested in getting a job with the union?
It wasn't necessarily with the union, because I had never experienced too much in union affairs in Saskatchewan, but it was just that I went to the Selective Service, I believe they called it in those years, in the war years, and these two jobs were available, one in a telegraph office. They wanted someone who wouldn't be interested in working steadily, because they would want to give the jobs to their fellows when they came back from overseas, and then the other four-hour job, which I preferred having, was at the hotel restaurant union. So that's, I went in and I started work, and they left the office within about an hour, and that was about the way I got started. There was no complication about it, so I just worked from, it was 12 to 4, I think, once I worked in those years.
What kind of work did you do for the union?
All the office work, all the office procedure.
Right.
Books and, you know, whatever. Any typing, anything that was to be done, try to look after members when they came in. Eventually, being like an office business agent as well as an office, you know, secretary and bookkeeper and payroll clerk, or as years went by. But in those first years, Emily and May were the only two, and Barbara Stewart was president, but she was no longer working out of the union office. And Emily and May were the business agents at that time. And so they were out pretty well all day, either scrounging dues or or trying to sign up new members, because there were so few of the places organized in that, you know, in those earlier years, 1945 and 46. And then I think it would be 1946, 47 that they made a dent into the organizing of the hotel employees. And that was done jointly with the building service union, and they had great success. They went sweeping through the hotels. They'd be standing at the employees' entrances at all shift changes, and passing out applications and leaflets, I guess, too. So they had overwhelming success, and so within a very short time, they had pretty well all the hotels organized. There were very few of them that stood out, you know, away from the union.
What years were those that?
It would be 47, I think, when most of them came in. 46, 47, I think it was. Towards the end of 46, 47.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of places were organized before that?
Just strictly the front end of the restaurants. They'd have, so often they'd have a different crew in the kitchen, different nationality. And in those years, the Department of Labor would give you certification for the unit, which would be just the front end, but in the latter years they would no longer do that. You had to have all, like the majority of all the people in the unit before they would give you certification to give you your bargaining rights. But in those years back, well, they were able to certify just front end, which meant that they would have maybe a half dozen waitresses, or, you know, depending on the size of the restaurant, and a cashier possibly, and hostess, but they had no cooks at all in those years back.
Mm. Had there been organizing in the 1930s?
Oh, yes, I'm sure there must have been, because it was Barbara Stewart, her husband Bill Stewart, he was active with Local 28, the local I was with, prior to the days that I was there, and it was prior to those days that there was a strike in the Vancouver Hotel, and then those employees were lost through that strike. They then went to the railroad union. But I would say before the days that I was there, you know, the few restaurants that were organized while I, you know, when I started, well, they had been organized, I think, for quite a few years back. I don't know how early, but our charter, like the Local 28 charter, was granted to Local 28 in July of 1900. It's the oldest charter, you know, so there must have been some organizing a good number of years before I was around.
What was the union's jurisdiction? It was waitresses?
All the restaurant employees and all the hotel employees, from basement to roof, I guess, more or less. And we had the jurisdiction for hotel and restaurant employees in those years back, for quite a few years. There was the Beverage Dispensers Union in Vancouver, so they had all the bar area of the hotel. And they didn't have bars in those days in the hotels anyway, they just had private clubs. So they had the private club members, actually, in those years. Then, as time went on, well, then the club employees, they broke away, or they didn't break away, but they formed their own club employees union. So it then meant that there were three unions within the city of Vancouver, the Hotel and Restaurant Local 28, the Beverage Dispensers Local 676, and the club employees union Local 740.
Where was that?
Well, that was in the very early years because it's tapes. When I first worked at the office in 1945, we were at 413 Granville, which was right at the corner of Granville and Hastings, where the United Building is, whatever you call it now, United Nations Building. And it was during the time we were there that I typed up the charter for the club local. And we were there, I think, until about possibly 48, 49, something like that. So it would be between 45 and 47 or 8, I think, when the club local was formed. And then following that, the Beverage Dispensers Union bought a building at 440 West Pender. We moved there, and it was then that the aluminum company started the Kitimat, you know, production thing. And so then the camp employees had to be considered, and Local 740 then took in all the camp employees, all of the catering industry, like the kitchens and bulk cooks who look after the bunkhouses and all that type. And so it gradually went along that they then amalgamated with Local 835, which covered the lower mainland, Westminster local, we used to term it as. So Local 740 and Local 835 became one as Local 835. And then just a matter of 1972, I think it was. Losing track of the years. Then in 1972, that Local 676 and Local 28 became one and were then Local 16. And it's now 2 years or 3 years past that Local 16 and Local 835 became one and now Local 40. But those dates can be checked out because I think I might have lost track of just the exact dates there.
What happened where?
Yes, after all the period of time.
Right. Do you remember which restaurants were organized before the big organizing drive in the hotel?
And there was a Trocadero and the Golden Gate and the Melrose and Love's. Love's was a very important one. And the one that Papa Leitrus, as they always called him, I can't remember the name of his now, though. And the Zenith.
Were any of... Oh, come on.
No, it's okay. I can't think of any others right at the moment.
Yeah. Were any of those organized in the 40s, or were they all...
Well, they were organized when I went into the union. You know, those were the standing members of the union when I went in, and there are probably a few more restaurants that I can't think of just at the moment. But I couldn't really tell you when they were first organized. I think Marion Sarich, when you're talking with her, she worked in the restaurants in the 1930s, and she, I think, would be able to give you that information more correctly.
Had you ever worked as a waitress? at all?
No, I never, other than eating in restaurants, I had never had any experience in the hotel restaurant industry at all. And so I thoroughly enjoyed it, though. I learned a great deal, you know, about the industry from working. And I will always say that the hotel restaurant industry is unique. And we still have, I think, a matter of a day or two ago, there's a woman phoned in and said, well, she didn't get her coffee break, and her husband belongs to the IBEW, and, you know, and her father-in-law belongs to some other union. And they said, well, you know, you should, and you shouldn't show up for shift if they don't give you your breaks. Well, you know, and I said, well, that's a good way to be fired, because, you know, our union just doesn't operate like that. You know, the IBEW might be able to pull out all their men, but we wouldn't be able to. And it's very true that it is a different type of industry entirely that you have to deal with. And I think different departments of the hotel are so much stronger in some respects than others. Like in years gone by, the chambermaids departments, housekeeping departments, wouldn't be nearly as adamant about their rights or their, you know, their rates or their breaks, whatever it might be, as, well, say the kitchen staff. There would be different crews who would be, you know, more knowledgeable, I guess, is what they should have and what they shouldn't have. But I think, too, in those years back, there were a lot of women who were just working, well, because their husbands possibly were not earning as much as they might like to have been earning, but they weren't as dependent upon work as a lot of women are as today, I think, that many are single parents and they're bringing up their families, as well as men, too, of course, but there didn't seem to be the same younger type of a girl working in those departments. There were no doubt in the waitresses end of it. But I did say I got so interested in the industry because there were many waitresses who were hardworking girls and who had children, and they had to be cared for with the daycare services they have today. And so it was quite a struggle. And, you know, the wages in those years back were not anywhere near, you know, what they are today. By far, they were much less. And I suppose the tipping was much less, too, in those days back. That's one secret that you never really know too much about. They keep that information to themselves pretty much of the time.
When you talk about the industry being different from, for example, electrical workers, can you talk a bit about that, a bit more about that in terms of some of the implications for...
I think in some ways that... Well, I believe in one way that where there's a group of men working, like, see, the Beverage Dispensers Union, the group of men working in a beer parlor would be together and stand together, whereas in our departments, we had so many departments. We had a few people at the front desk who were quite alienated from the chambermaid or the, you know, the kitchen staff, and they each, in their own way, were not strong enough units within the one big unit. Like the chambermaids, they'd each be assigned a floor, and at lunchtime they would see each other. But other than that, well, they wouldn't have the same association as the, say, the IBEW or the, you know, iron workers or some of these people who are working within one, you know, factory or plant or, you know, mm-hmm. whatever the place might be. Although a lot of construction workers are not really working right together, but I still think that it's a little different than one individual desk clerk who might be on shift. And, maybe one individual bellman on shift in those years, and maybe, well, whatever the size of the kitchen might be, depending on that, there would be just small little groups, but not any one big strong group that would, you know, take the same stand on things mm-hmm. and would be, I think, more inclined to let things slide along and not worry too much about, you know, living up to the letter of the agreement. They were abusing it one way as much as the employer might try to abuse it or skirt it whenever they could, which they still do, I guess, when they can.
So the isolation was a problem in terms of...
I would think so, a great deal that would be that. As I say, I think in some cases where there was a solid group, it would be where they, well, maybe all the waitresses in a dining room, there might just be a good strong group there, but they may not be in conjunction or not be... go along with the kitchen staff because they probably didn't get the best service from the chef that they thought they should get, or any number of things, because these are all, I would say, very unique to this industry. You know, the chefs are screaming and hollering at the waitress, and the waitress in turn figures that she should get her orders, or she's maybe not getting along too well with the hostess, because the hostess doesn't, you know, see the best tipping patrons at her tables, and you know, it's all different. Whereas in any construction industries, or in, I would think, in any of the clothing outlets and, you know, that type of thing, that they have their work assigned to them, they sit down and they do it, or they stand up and do it, whichever the case might be. But in ours, they're meeting the public, and they're different type of industry mm-hmm. entirely. And I think, too, the fact that our industry, they work, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and there's never any breaks, like where other industries, they are all working, you know, from Monday to Friday, from 9 to 5, or whatever the case might be. Where ours, they're coming and going, and they don't stand together like as a whole union the same way as some of these other mm-hmm. you know, outlets would.
Mm-hmm. What kind of measures has the union taken over the years to try and combat some of that, those problems?
Well, I think there's always that apathy that the members just are not going to be too interested or concerned, and it's pretty difficult to get them to turn out to meetings. We used to send out a monthly meeting letter and give them, you know, more or less a little bit of a rundown on what's happening around the union. And then we found that if we did too much of that, well, then they would find, well, they didn't really have to attend meetings, because that way they were getting all the news anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think all unions, or at least we've certainly discussed it over a period of years, that all unions have a very difficult time getting a good percentage of their membership out to meetings. Possibly at the time negotiations are going on, they'll be more interested then. And surprisingly, even then, you know, there's not that many at times will vote on the contracts when they are, you know, the offers presented to them. So they keep struggling to try to interest them more, and we have a little newspaper that's issued now prior to each meeting, but it's just mm-hmm. difficult, I guess, just to interest them. And they all have various walks of life in this industry. It's more type transient trade, although there certainly are a number of people who are not transient by any means, but there are more people who come and go and can work part-time, or university students who mm-hmm. are not going to be that concerned about the industry, because it's you know, it helps them through their schooling, and also like this time of the year now we'll have all kinds of students working in the summer months, where you don't find that. I don't believe you find that so much in other industries.
Has that always been the case now?
Oh, I think so in this mm-hmm. industry. And I think that's one advantage to this industry, that a person could travel possibly across Canada or across mm-hmm. Europe, and they could probably always find a few hours you know, to work as a waitress or whatever, and mm-hmm. earn a bit of money as they travel along, where you can't do that if you're a carpenter or electrician. It's not going to work out quite as well that way.
When you became a business agent, part of your work was to service.
I wasn't actually a business agent at any time, although I was more or less like an office business agent uh-huh. because of the fact that in those years we didn't have the staff that there is today, of course, and I would be in the office by myself a good part of the day, well, pretty well always by myself. And so if employees came in, or if they phoned in, well, I got to the point that I could interpret the agreements well enough that I was able to try in some way to help them, or phone the employer and try to get things, you know, straighten around a bit for them, whatever.
What kind of issues came up regularly?
Well, I think chiefly it would be in connection with the... one of their main concerns, I think, is their shifts. You know, if they were on a regular shift, that they were changed, that they could never have a Sunday off, where they always had a midnight shift if they were desk clerk. These types of things were that made them most unhappy. Where if they had overtime that wasn't paid to them, well, they would come in and ask about it, but it didn't seem to be of the major importance, where nowadays I think that that is more or less of major importance, and seniority. But that number of years back, there wasn't that much seniority built up, or it wasn't the issue as much as it is today.
Was the question of shifts particularly important for women?
Well, not in some departments. Not in the housekeeping department, because they pretty well always had just the one shift, and they would only have a very skeleton staff for their late checkouts. And it's been known, you know, like in some hotels, they wouldn't have a late shift maid, except that they might have someone for the washrooms or powder rooms, wherever they might be termed as, and then they would then be required to make up the late checkouts, or bellhops would in those years be required, but I would hesitate to think any Del Hub nowadays would go up and make up a room. Maybe they do in some of the smaller hotels still, but it was rather interesting in that way, you know, that you found that people had varied jobs to do, and that was also an issue. In some of the smaller restaurants, they might be required to do dishes, and they, you know, felt that that was not the duties of a waitress, which is true enough. We don't feel it is either. And in the housekeeping departments, we would take cases up oftentimes with the compensation board, some of these types of things, where women were required to stand up on top of something and, you know, wash windows or hang drapes. And we felt that those types of jobs should not be the chambermaid's job. So we had what we called housemen, and their classifications would be the cleaning of the lobby and outside hall work, not the duties of the maid assigned in the room, you know, the duties of the maid was assigned in the room. But a lot of those things would be their chief complaints, because I think in those earlier years, the hotelmen had not been accustomed to operating under a union agreement, and the wage rates, I would think in many cases, they, once they agreed to it, once they signed the contracts, well, then they paid them. There wasn't too much, I don't think, reason for the people to complain in those years. But now when they have double and a half times their regular rate of pay for a statutory holiday, well, there's certainly going to be all kinds of complaints that they don't get it, or that the management will not have as many people on staff naturally, because it's costing them far too much to, you know, have too many on staff at those rates. But when we first got the 40-hour week, that was a hardship, I think, in that number of years back for the restaurants that we had. And I think there that the employers tried to get more hours of work out of them than what, you know, what we wanted them to get out anyway, because it was a little too early, I think. And I remember our international vice president in those years saying that we had really jumped the gun so far as a 40-hour week being established in this industry. But it was great when they did, of course. It was a starting point of 40-hour weeks with us and the IWA being the first of them in the province.
So you were able to use, I guess, clauses established by stronger unions, in a sense? Like industrial
unions? Yes. Well, I would think they followed it through and tried to write as many of the better things in. And, of course, write it into the agreement, even though it might have been in the minimum wage acts and such, what would still be written in. So far as uniforms, that was always another complaint. But in those years back, the girls were required to wear, well, chiefly the white starchy uniforms and such that probably aren't worn so much as of today. But they had to have, I think it was two changes at least a week, and then they had to be laundered. Well, that wasn't always lived up to, and that would cause some concern to a lot of our girls. And then following the days of those types of uniforms, they started then wearing the nylon materials, and they weren't the best materials to be sending out to laundries, so they would have the girls do their own uniforms, and then they were supposed to pay them their laundry allowance. Well, these little things were always cropping up that, you know, they would not get their laundry money or, you know, some such thing as that. And then, of course, we always had our regular complaint from the staff that they never got proper food served to them, you know, when they were staff members. And then, of course, we'd get the same complaint from the managements that anything that was supplied to them, they would, you know, be eating steaks instead of having something cheaper on the menu. Those were just kind of beefing problems that were never any major concern to us.
Were there any particularly militant restaurants, you remember?
Well, I guess that Only Fish, it was a restaurant that I forgot to mention earlier, and I think they were. And I think Love's Cafe, and I believe they had the cooperation of management more so there than some of the other restaurants. And it seemed as though it was a very strong group. And Flo Allen, who you referred to in your letter, she worked at Love's Cafe for many, many years. And they had waiters in their restaurant, whereas I would think there were
there were very seldom any waiters employed in the industry, except as a night waiter, you know, like at the counter or something, if there was a restaurant open all night. But otherwise, there were very, very few waiters in the industry. So I think Love's, they later became the Skillet, and it was still, you know, union following that.
Was militancy due in part to, you think, there being waiters in the bargaining unit?
Oh, I don't think so. At least it didn't seem to me so in those years. No, I don't think so. I think the girls were, you know, some of the waitresses, they could look after themselves pretty good. I don't think they had the voice there to manage their affairs for them.
When there were waitresses and waiters on the same job, would there be equal pay?
No, there wasn't in those years. You know, and in the latter years, of course, they had to discontinue those types of things in our agreements. And we'd have busboys and busgirls and waiters and waitresses. But now they are all equalized, of course, over the last few years. But in those years back, usually the waitress was a little lower paid, somewhat lower paid than me. I can't just remember exactly how much now, but it was a little bit lower.
Did the union try and fight that with employers?
I don't think so, not so much in those days. It seemed to be that there were so few waiters in the earlier years that there wasn't really that much concern. I think possibly that as the hotels were organized, I'm just trying to think, that there seemed to me there was one other classification where it came into and bothered us a little bit more than the waiter-waitress situation, but right at the moment I can't think now what that was. But I don't think there was never the feeling like there seems to be, as of this day and age, there didn't seem to be that fighting for equal rights.
Mm-hmm.
And there wasn't that number of men in the industry either in those years back. I mean, you'd get men in the kitchen, but we had, like in the Georgia Hotel kitchens, we had a good number of women who were the roast cooks and the vegetable cooks, and the men, you know, certainly worked in the kitchen, but the women carried a fairly good, you know, sway so far as the senior jobs were concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And then other than bellmen and a few desk clerks, well, you know, there weren't that many, and janitors, of course, and housemen, but because they usually had the girls elevator operators and
right.
the just you know the Delmans, as they say, then they had their own separate little group.
When the hotels were organized, do you remember how they organized, like what kinds of steps were taken to get the hotels to be in?
Well, I should remember if I can think back, because anything that was typed up, and I don't think they had the money in those years. The union offices didn't have that much money to have things printed up to hand
right.
to the employees. They would have application cards, of course, printed. But I just can't remember, you know, the type of material that they presented to the employee at the entranceways. And they couldn't, you know, organize on the premises, so they had to do it from the outside. And they, as I say, they had good response to it. It was, I guess, about just the right time. And it was during those war years when people were earning more. And I think, too, that the shipyard workers, and there was more militancy, I think, throughout the union movement in British Columbia, that was making the hotel people a little more aware of the fact that they should get a piece of the action, too.
Right.
But even then, the average desk clerk, they had to, you know, certainly appear to be very well dressed in the nicer hotels. And I think that, if I remember correctly, the wage rate at that time was 45 cents an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we signed a union agreement, I think the first rate for a desk clerk was 68 cents an hour. So, I mean, it wasn't anything to speak of, but I guess it was probably better than the minimum wage rate at 45 cents, I was at then. But.
So would they try and find people inside who worked inside to help?
Oh, I would think by all means that there was always a few who were more, you know, keenly interested in getting the thing on the road, as you might say, and so they would be the first to come into the office and sign application cards or to sign up, and then they in turn, no doubt, would talk to their fellow workers or our union staff would in some way try to promote the idea that they should do and, you know, get the people to do it, you know, on the job, where they couldn't get to each and every person. But they certainly tried, and as I say, they covered every shift for a few weeks there, but it rolled along so nicely that it was, as I remember, an overwhelming success. I remember they were so pleased about it, you know, that all their efforts were, you know, well worth.
Right. Did that mean that the majority of hotels were organized by the forums?
Yes. Now, pretty well all of them. Of course, there are many more hotels nowadays than there was in those days, but yes, pretty well all of them. There were a few who stood out, one of them being the Alcazar, but they were very, very good to their employees. The Wainwrights were exceptionally good to their employees, and people, you know, were on staff there for many, many years, mm-hmm. and the same with the Grosvenor. They had people that still, the same situation there, that the service areas, we call it, rather than the bar areas. I doubt if they're in the union as of today, even, because they've been there for so many years and they're well treated, and they just feel, I guess, that there's no reason, although our health and welfare and pension plan, dental plans and such mm-hmm. would be a good reason for them to be in, but they no doubt have been given some compensation by the management for that. But there were very few of them, though, that stayed outside of the union. Pretty well all of them came in. And that would be only the licensed hotels. Like, there's many hotels in Vancouver. They're more or less, well, some of them would be like a glorified rooming house, and those hotels were never organized, really.
Did you get help from the labor movement as a whole in the organizing campaign?
Generally speaking, I'm sure we did, because we were always affiliated with the councils, but so far as them participating in an active way, I don't remember that they ever did. They no doubt give moral support or tried in some way to promote whatever they could so far as organizing, but I don't remember that they ever, you know, were out on the job with our people.
And did any of the hotel workers have to strike or take job action in order to establish them?
No, not in those years back. We didn't have a strike until 1972. From the time I was there, pardon me, prior to the time I was there, as I mentioned earlier, that while Bill Stewart was a business agent, I understand it was during his period of office that they had the Vancouver Hotel and lost it due to the strike. But following that, we carried through till 1972. Mm. Pardon me, 1970. Mm. Yeah, 1970 it was when we had the strike. And we were out about a month, I think, from about June this something to into July the 16th, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Why was it that people didn't need to strike? Was it that there were fairly good relationships with employers?
I think so. Like the Hotels Association, and they still are, you know, they're on a good basis with the union, and I think that like Stan Smith, who was the labor representative under the BC Hotels Association, when I first worked in the union office, he worked with the Building Service Employees Union. And who's now the labor liaison man for the BC Hotels Association. He was officer and president and secretary treasurer of Local 835 of the Hotel Restaurant Bartenders Union. And so they've always had a fairly good relationship over a period of years. And I think it's always been pretty tough struggling. But there again, we didn't have the support, I would say, for strike action that you would have in the industrial industries. Mm. As I was mentioning earlier, that, you know, the waitresses, well, if they're getting fairly good tips, well, they would rather be working than, you know, on strike. Or the chambermaids, they were just supplementing, you know, their income or their husband's income. And it wasn't as important to them, because their husbands were still working anyway, it wasn't as so important to them. So they were not really that concerned with the going out on strike to gain something better and greater. So I don't think that there was the we didn't have the same, strength behind us. No doubt they used it in negotiations. I'm sure that they probably threatened strike if they couldn't get a little bit more money, but they would also know that when they got to a certain point, well, they probably couldn't bring the people out successfully, you know, and they didn't have money either for strike pay or anything of that nature.
When the waitresses and waiters were establishing their monetary clauses, would they consider their tips as part of
No, we've always been very adamant about that, that no way shall the tips be taken into consideration when it comes to a wage increase. But it always had some mention, and I think at times there was always the idea that the non-gratuity employees, and I believe in some negotiations, in some contracts that were signed, I believe that the non-gratuity employees got a little bit more per hour increase than the gratuity employees got.
Would you ever have to deal with employers who, for example, would want a percentage of tips?
Oh, yes, very much so. Not maybe the employer, not the top level, but the maitre d' and the chef and the, the wine steward and so on, the service bar, and which is an established thing. It is very established. But we had a case, and when you're talking with Chris Waddell, you might she might mention that to you, that I can remember we had a case where a girl phoned into one of those hotlines. I believe she worked for Kenny Stauffer up at the Lulabelle up on West Broadway, and she phoned into the hotlines, and it was quite an issue on the radio programs, and so they in turn then contacted our office.
Hello.
They in turn contacted our office. And
do you think you want this? This is off?
The radio station in turn then were contacting our office and wanting, some spokesman. And Chris was the one delegated to do it. Al Martin was then the secretary treasurer. And so he delegated Chris to speak on that radio program. But it's an established fact, and a lot of people, again, outside of the industry would feel that, it certainly is not a proper thing. It's they feel that the waitress is serving the food, and she's the one who should get the tip, but that's not necessarily so. She has to depend on someone else to provide her with the service in order for her to give service. And if the food is nice and if people enjoy their meal, they're likely to be a little happier about giving a tip. So there, in turn, I suppose the chef should get some of the credit for serving a nice meal, too.
Okay. I have another question, which is around the women who worked for the unions. Were you organized into OTU? Or?
Yes, I was. When I went into the union office to inquire about the job that had been mentioned at the Select Service, they said, well, you'll have to become a member of the Office Employees Union. So that I did then when I started to work there. But I was never a very active office employee member. I lived out in Burnaby, and it wasn't really that much interest or concern because I had never belonged to unions in Saskatchewan, and I wasn't really that familiar with them. But following that, I participated a little bit more, and I was president of the Office Employees Union then for a period of time. And, eventually, and I don't know just how much I can say on tape, because eventually the one person who was then became secretary treasurer, he in no way would listen to any negotiation talk or have anybody come in to our office to suggest what should be paid to the office staff. He would, be the one to decide, and that was that. And so from that time on, I was not a member of the Office Employees Union because it was it just was finalized there and there. And the same thing, I think, came to pass here in the Local 40 or the Local 835 office. I think the same thing came to pass in latter years. Like the Teamsters experience, well, some of the girls from 835, they went out on strike. And so following that, I think that they just more or less discontinued that type of union organization outside of being a member of our own union.
Right. So does that mean that the women who work here are members of the union?
Of the hotel, hotel, restaurant, bartenders union.
Okay, so they are union.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they all pay dues and, pay their initiation and participate in the health and welfare, pension, dental, and prescription plan of the hotel, restaurant plan. You see.
Right. Going back to when you were the president of the Office Employees Union, when was that?
Well, that would be, let me see, that would be in the late 40s or early 50s. I wish I could just remember now.
but I was present for 2 or 3 years. But I guess in some ways I used to speak up quite freely at the office employees meetings, because we were such a small group, and the only people I had in the office employees union were people who worked in union offices, mm-hmm. and they felt that they should get, you know, more or less in my way of thinking, if they worked in the electrical union office, well, they felt that they should get as much as the top lineman should get. And I would quite often speak out and say, well, I don't feel that, you know, we as one small union should be demanding, you know, the great increases that, you know, a lot of the girls seem to feel they should have. And I still suggest not now when there's a bigger staff. Well, I guess it's not possible, but I do think in those years back, we certainly had many more privileges than any other office staff would ever have. You know, we were not restricted to just a lunch break or coffee break or those types of things, that we were, you know, were quite free to come and go, as long as we got our work done. Well, there wasn't too much restrictions put on our movements. And for that reason, I became a little bit disenchanted with the office employees union, because, as I say, they weren't organizing, and there wasn't anybody on staff. It was just a small, as I say, all just the union offices people. That was the only few people belonging to it.
Did you feel that it was like in contradiction with working for a union to demand high wages? Because in a way, it was
no. I don't really think that. But I can't quite understand in some ways, when you're working for a union, why they would be disenchanted with you not belonging to the office employees union, you know, like into your own,
right.
What do you call it? Your own classifications, but I can't just think of the word right, the one that I would like to use. But, however, I mean, it came to pass in our unions, mm-hmm. and I would say that possibly, I don't know what the Teamsters are going to do now, because I understand they've hired pretty well all new staff, and they may, you know, just suggest too that the people become members of their union.
Yeah, I think that was one of the issues.
Was that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What other things did the office workers union try and negotiate other than wages at that time? Was it?
Oh yes, they had about a 30-hour week, and they had, oh, I can't remember. Please believe me, it was beautiful. You know, if everybody could just have, you know, gone along with it, it was great. But that's a good number of years ago that the business agent, the secretary treasurer at that time, you know, who was then the top man, that was part of the time that Chris Waddell left the office, and so it would be 15 or 20 years ago now, I should think.
Right. And were they able to...